A long secret memo that lays out the Obama administration's justification for killing an American citizen in a drone strike was released yesterday. It's raising questions about the country's drone program and the secrecy surrounding it.
Our next guest says there's a lot more in the memo that helps rather than hurts the administration, and the lack of transparency caused more problems than it solved.
Joining us now is David Cole. He's a professor at Georgetown University Law Center. He's also the legal correspondent for The Nation. David, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with some background. Why was this memo kept secret for so long?
Well, it was written in July 2010 to lay out the legal foundation for whether the president could authorize the military and the CIA to target and kill Anwar al-Awlaki, a U.S. citizen then living in Yemen. And that was, at the time, obviously, a covert operation involving the CIA in an ongoing armed conflict, and therefore was involved a great deal of classified information. And in addition, many memos like this, that is, memos written by the Justice Department for internal use by the executive branch, are not published and disclosed to the public as a general rule.
And in reading the non-redacted parts of the released memo, was this really geared toward this one person, Anwar al-Awlaki, or was it setting a precedent for other similar strikes?
Well, it was very much geared towards the targeting of Anwar al-Awlaki. He is the only U.S. citizen who thus far has been targeted and killed. There have been three other U.S. citizens who have been killed as essentially collateral damage in attacks targeted at foreign nationals. But he was the first to be identified as a U.S. citizen being targeted for a drone strike. And so there was, you know, understandably significant concern within the administration as to whether or not this would be legal and how various laws that, for example, make it a crime to kill Americans abroad might apply. And so the memo is directed towards that specific question. However, the analysis that it adopts did, I think, ultimately guide the administration in some of the standards that it ultimately announced that for governing its drone program.
So what did it lay out? What was the rationale justifying a drone strike in this particular case?
So, the memo redacts all the facts concerning Anwar al-Awlaki. So we don't really know much other than what's been leaked. But what's been leaked is this is a guy who was said to be the leader of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which is an al-Qaeda kind of spin-off group. In some view it as part of al-Qaeda, others view it as working alongside al-Qaeda in the fight against the United States. He had been centrally involved in planning the foiled Christmas Day bombing in which the underwear bomber sought to explode a plane over Detroit on Christmas Day 2009, I believe. And he'd also been involved in another foiled attack where bombs were to be placed in printer toner cartridges and explode several cargo planes simultaneously flying over the Atlantic from the UK to the United States. And so the CIA said, look, we know this guy is a bad guy. He's the leader of this organization. This organization is fighting us alongside al-Qaeda. And he can't be captured. His capture is not feasible. He's in Yemen. He's in ungovernable territory. And we can't capture him. Can we kill him? And so what the memo's authors ask is, in a situation where an American citizen is part of the enemy fighting force against us, where Congress has authorized the use of military force against that fighting force, where he poses an imminent and continuing threat to the lives of U.S. persons, has been involved in past attacks and is planning future attacks, and where his capture is not feasible, is it lawful under federal statutes, under the Constitution, and under international law to target him and kill him without charges and without a trial, even though he's a U.S. citizen? And the memo concludes it is, because Congress has authorized the use of military force. Military force includes the authority to use lethal force against the enemy. This guy fit the bill of the enemy, and according to the facts, as set forth by the CIA and the military, he couldn't be captured and he posed an imminent threat. And under those limited circumstances, the memo says, it's lawful for the president to authorize his killing.
Let's key in on that imminent threat point, as I think you did in something you've written since this memo was released. I think you pointed out that it was 15 months between the memo and the drone attack. How imminent a threat was he is a question that some are raising.
Right. No, I think it's a very good question. And the Obama administration has taken the view that it can target and kill people who pose what it calls an imminent and continuing threat. And in some sense, that's a contradiction in terms. If a threat is imminent, that means it's about to happen. And it's not. If it's continuing, then it's not imminent. It's a long-term threat. The whole idea behind the imminence requirement, at least with respect to the killing of a U.S. citizen, is if he doesn't pose an imminent threat, then you are obligated to attempt other means to incapacitate him, to capture him, to strengthen the forces over there so that he cannot engage in bad action against us, to use surveillance and the like. And only if he poses an imminent threat would it be permissible without charges or trial to use deadly force against such an individual. So that was the reasoning of the memo in July of 2010. And the military said to the lawyers, look, he poses an imminent threat. But then the military sat on that memo and did not pull the trigger to kill Anwar al-Awlaki until September 2011, 15 months later, which really raises questions about whether he truly posed an imminent threat or how elongated is the administration's conception of an imminent threat.
We're talking with David Cole about the drone memo released yesterday offering the White House justification for a drone attack that killed an American citizen, targeted and killed an American citizen who was involved with an al-Qaeda organization or organization that worked with al-Qaeda. Questions have followed the release of that memo, including why it took this long to release what they did. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234.
Well, what was your reaction to the content of the memo? Should American citizens, under the right circumstances, be the legal target of a drone strike? And would you like to see more transparency when it comes to the nation's drone program? Our number is 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking with Georgetown Law Professor David Cole about the drone memo made public yesterday. In it, the Obama administration lays out their rationale for the drone strike targeting an American citizen and alleged terrorist suspect in 2011.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Now that we've heard the administration's justification for the killing, what do you think? Should it be something that the U.S. is able to pursue policy-wise in the future, or do you have legal concerns? And would you like to see more transparency when it comes to the nation's drone program? Call 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll go to your calls in just a moment. But David, before we do, let's pick up on that transparency issue. You write that you think the Obama administration did more harm than good to itself by not being more transparent about its justifications here.
Well, that's right, because, you know, for a long time, the administration refused even to acknowledge that it was had a targeted killing program. It refused to acknowledge that it killed Anwar al-Awlaki or any of the several thousand foreign nationals that it has killed with drones. And therefore refused also to set forth what, if any, limits there were to its exercises this authority. And so the message that that sends to the world and to the American people is the president has this power to, you know, order someone to push a button and kill people halfway around the world that is entirely in secret, that appears to operate under no set of clear rules, and is entirely unaccountable. And that, of course, raises and has raised tremendous skepticism about the validity of the program around the world. And it's, you know, it's come to be viewed almost as negatively around the world as the torture program that President Bush put in place. And I think had he been more open about the program, had he, for example, disclosed this memo much earlier before a court ordered him to do so, I think people would have seen that this, he's not asserting some unchecked authority. He's not saying he can kill any suspected terrorist he wants wherever that person is found. He's asserting a rather narrow authority, the authority well established in the law of war to kill the enemy during an armed conflict, and in particular where the enemy poses an imminent threat to your side and cannot be captured. And if the world had seen that from the outset, that it's a limited authority, much more limited authority, then it, I think, might have been more accepting, and drones would not have become a kind of rallying cry and recruiting tool for the enemy.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got Rob on the line in Milwaukee. Rob, hi.
Hi, how you doing, sir?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, first I wanted to say that I do, I agree with the guest's opinions on self-harm the administration's been doing with a lack of transparency and what is, I think, a pretty clear cut and dry solution to a warfare problem. But I wanted to offer a little insight. I spent a few years overseas working in these sort of programs, and the 15-month thing that people have been talking about as to why was this sitting on a table, you have to understand a lot of these proposals for solutions to, you know, asymmetric warfare problems are comprised and planned and written well in advance because they require an exact opportunistic moment to execute that we never really know when those things will happen. You know, the Obama administration has been really good as far as having very, very stringent requirements to conduct these types of strikes that require many different intelligence disciplines to offer many different perspectives to minimize collateral damage. And you're talking about people who hide out in hills and caves that don't have electricity, that don't have cell phone reception. And it's important that people understand that 15 months for someone that important who could be hid that well is not a large amount of time for an operation like that to wait for an opportunity to strike.
Rob, thanks a lot for bringing up that perspective and sharing that with us. So, David, we write the legal justification today. The opportunity might come tomorrow or in 15 months or never.
Right, and I think that makes sense, although you still have this question lurking. Did he really pose an imminent threat in July of 2010 if the United States felt, you know, that it could wait 15 months to kill him in September 2011, and did he, or if he posed an imminent threat in July 2010, does he still pose an imminent threat in September 2011? And one of the problems I have with the program, you know, continuing going forward is the complete lack of transparency and accountability with respect to how these rules are applied in particular cases. In Israel, they recognize the right to use targeted killing in an armed conflict context, but they require that there be an ex post review by the courts to ensure that the action was in fact necessary, was in fact fit within the legal requirements. And here there is no after the fact review. So it may well be, as the caller suggests, that there were perfectly good reasons why it took 15 months and that he did continue to pose an imminent threat. But without an assessment of that, we just don't know. A couple of months ago, there was a report that a U.S. drone strike in Yemen struck a wedding party, killing most of the wedding party. There's been no acknowledgement that we even were behind that strike, no attempt to have some kind of post hoc review and accountability. And I think that contributes to the skepticism that the world feels and contributes to the illegitimacy of the program.
Has this been called for by anybody, say, in Congress, that we need this kind of review after these targeted drone strikes?
I don't know. I don't know whether specific members of Congress have called for it. Certainly, many commentators have called for it. People have pointed to the Israeli example as an example showing that it can be done and that it's, likely to give legitimacy to the program. You know, but the bottom line is pretty basic. When you're exercising the authority to take a human being's life, and particularly one of your own constituents' lives, without a trial, without charges, there's got to be something that ensures that there are very strict rules and that the rules are followed. And right now, we don't have that because the rules have been largely secret and the actual implementation of the practice is entirely secret, even after the fact, long after, the need for secrecy is gone. The administration refuses to give any information about, for example, how many innocent civilians have been killed, how effective the program has been, how many people they have killed. None of that has been provided by the administration. And that, I think, makes people fear the worst, whether justified or not. And I think the disclosure of this memo shows that sometimes when we fear the worst, it's not justified. That is, this memo, I think, is actually a pretty good memo. But we continue to have a program that is run almost entirely in secret and therefore, I think, is seen as illegitimate by many around the world.
Well, this memo provides some transparency when an American citizen is the target. Do we have any kind of comparable transparency if it's not an American citizen?
Well, that's a great question. And the administration in May 2013, but right before President Obama made a major national security speech at the National Defense University, they for the first time acknowledged that they had killed four Americans in drone strikes, Anwar al-Awlaki and the three others I mentioned before who were collateral damage in other strikes targeted at others. But they have never acknowledged the killing of the several thousand who have been reported killed under the Obama administration alone, and several hundred more under the Bush administration. None of those have been acknowledged, and we don't know whether memos were written with respect to those individuals, whether the same rules apply to them or not. And again, that just fosters the sense that the United States is not playing by the rules. And it may well be playing by the rules, but if it is, why can't we say so? Why can't we be open about what we're doing?
These memos came out in part because of a court order, because of a legal challenge to this. I assume a lot of that centered around the fact that there was an American citizen. Could something comparable happen with a non-citizen? Could a court order a release of similar documents?
Well, it definitely could. I mean, in this case, the ACLU and the New York Times were aware that this memo existed because the existence of the memo had been leaked, and they specifically requested it the under the Freedom of Information Act. And the court largely ruled that because the administration had put out a kind of very truncated, unclassified version of this analysis in what it called a white paper that it distributed to members of Congress, the court held that it couldn't justify keeping the rest of the memo secret. So, that it was an unusual circumstance in which the United States had already disclosed some aspects in a limited way of what they were doing, and therefore the court held you have to disclose most of the memo. They did allow them to redact the facts concerning Anwar al-Awlaki. So I'm sure there are other memos involving other individuals. I don't know whether there's one for every targeted person, but there's, I'm sure, a number of other memos. But whether courts would order the disclosure of those under the Freedom of Information Act without the administration having, in some sense, sort of shown its hand with respect to those memos, I don't know. But my broader point is I just think, it's in the administration's interest to make these things public, and it's in the interest of the rule of law for them to be public.
David, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
That's David Cole. He's professor at Georgetown University Law Center and legal correspondent for The Nation.